Oshkosh and WZBU New Holstein Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a civic media station.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The federal government shutdown will not be fixed in a day or even two. Lawmakers won't take up another stopgap measure until at least Friday due to Yom Kippur holiday tomorrow. ABC's Alex Preche is in D.C.
We're already seeing about 750,000 furloughed workers. That's according to the Congressional Budget Office. And we've got tens of thousands of essential workers who are working, being forced to work without a paycheck. Those are TSA officers, air traffic controllers, also members of the military. Military, ICE agents as well. But going forward, the longer the shutdown plays out, the more of a concern it is.
On a conference call with House Republicans today, the OMB director warning a reduction in force or layoffs targeting furloughed federal employees could begin in the coming days. Payroll processor ADP showing the economy lost 32,000 jobs last month, opposite of what analysts projected to add jobs. On Wall Street, stocks ended up, investors shrugging off the shutdown. This is ABC News.
You're listening to WISS, the Fox Valley's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
For 98.3 and 96.5 WISS News, I'm Lisa Hale. Wisconsin is currently one of only two states in the country that does not offer 12 months postpartum care for Medicaid recipients. Fox Valley lawmakers were asked in a virtual town hall meeting how to make it happen in our state. Democratic Representative Lori Palmieri of Oshkosh is the co-author of Assembly Bill 97, which would extend postpartum coverage from 90 days to 12 months.
This bill introduced and yet to receive even a public hearing, despite the bipartisan support and passing in the Senate. The holdup is in the majority party leadership in the assembly, not because there's not support on this.
Democratic Representative Lee Snodgrass of Appleton said she does not see passage happening in the House and called out the person she holds responsible.
The way to get it to pass is to have Robin Voss resign and go on to something else and to have a different majority leader who would be willing to bring it forward. He is the sole person standing in the way of this passing. It has already passed the Senate. They have enough votes through Republicans and Democrats, and I think maybe even just Republicans on the assembly side. He is refusing to allow it to get a hearing. He's refusing to allow it to get to the floor. He alone is the obstacle.
Republican Senator Andre Jacques of New Franken was also part of the virtual town hall. He noted that the bill has passed the Senate with bipartisan support.
I voted for it on the Senate floor in each of the past two sessions. But far be it from me to say exactly what it's going to take the assembly not to pass a bill. But I do think its best chance to pass might be in combination with some other reforms.
The virtual town hall meeting was hosted by the League of Women Voters, Appleton Fox Cities, and the League of Women Voters, Winnebago County. I'm Lisa Hale for 98.3 and 96.5 WISS News.
After further review, hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers coaching staff reviewing the tape of Sunday night's game in Dallas, in which Green Bay kicked a field goal with 1 second left, ending in a tie. Matt LaFleur admits that was poor clock management.
Just looking at the clock, I'm like, oh my God, there's going to be no time left. It's a very humbling experience to go through that. It's unacceptable, quite honestly. And there's nothing we can do about it now other than we better learn from it, everybody.
The Packers have the week off before hosting the Bengals Sunday, October 12th. NBA, Bobby Portis says, after meeting with Bucks GM John Horst and coach Doc Rivers, he decided to stay in Milwaukee.
Being able to have that open dialogue, open communication with John, open communication with Doc, it's been a great experience for me being here in Milwaukee. Definitely would have been weird going to another franchise, and so I'm happy I'm here.
That's Bucks forward Bobby Portis with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
You're listening to WISS, the Fox Valley's home to the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid-50s. Mostly sunny and staying warm for tomorrow, a high pretty close to 80. And we stay warm with 80s right on through the weekend, some rain chances towards Sunday. Cooler next week. Right now it's 73.
Oh, this is Robert Pilot of Nativerts Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The incomparable Jane Matner. You're a coffee drinker.
I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning for most of my career. Yeah. You need coffee.
Something.
Or a slap across the face or something. How much coffee do you drink a day? How many cups
not
of coffee?
Not as much as you might think. Maybe 2 16-ounce cups, more or less. Maybe not quite that much some days.
Zahmer, is that true?
I mean, from what I can verify, I don't know what he drinks in the privacy of his own home.
No one knows.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app, Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, Civic Media host Greg Bach joins me to discuss the Milwaukee Comedy Festival. Then Civic Media's Catherine Lake talks about a big movie screening in Madison, and actor Dan Davies drops by. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of the Todd Allbaugh Show.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
I wouldn't get on this program with all of you fine folks every day and talk about how to do that through voting and through speaking out. I'm here with you every day.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
What are you doing as an elected official? You have no business in an elected office.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Thank you for having me.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everyone, and happy Wednesday to one and all. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. A programming note for today. I have been talking about Charlie Kirk quite a bit on this program because I think it's incredibly important for us to be clear-eyed and plain-spoken about what Mr. Kirk espoused in its role in the current MAGA movement. Yesterday, I had a caller dial in while I was talking with my frequent guest, Angela Lang, who is the executive director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. We were talking about Mr. Kirk's history of racist rhetoric, misogyny, xenophobia, pickinism. Charlie Kirk transacted in it frequently. And I promised the caller who was objecting to my characterizations of Mr. Kirk, the caller said, but the context, Maggie, you've got to play the whole clip. And I promised the caller yesterday that I would spend some time today talking about Mr. Kirk in full context and exploring some of his rhetorical or argumentation tactics. I was going to start doing that today at 5:30, but it requires more time. So we're going to do that this afternoon starting at 5 o'clock. I think this is incredibly important because the tactics used by Mr. Kirk are used throughout the MAGA movement. And it's important for us to be able to identify them so that we can engage in more meaningful debate. So do not go anywhere. If you've got friends or family that keep talking about, the context, I'm just asking questions. If you hear that, then the second hour of this program is going to be for you. I have been working so very hard with my board operator and producer, Jacob, with my senior producer, Jamie. I thank them. We've got a ton of sound to help illustrate Mr. Kirk's tactics. So do not go anywhere. Let your friends and family know we're going to have this very special, in-depth rebuttal, analysis, and breakdown, takedown, if you will, of Charlie Kirk. I also have something special that I want to share with all of you today. The U.S. government, the federal government, is shut down. We're going to talk in a moment about all the lies that are being told by Republicans about the shutdown, specifically the lie that they traffic in every day, multiple times a day, on every network they get on, that they're shutting it down and they won't talk to Democrats because Democrats want to give free health care to people who are here in this country illegally. That's a lie, and I'll explain more about it in a moment. But given the government shutdown and discussions with my senior producer, we want to provide an outlet, not just about the shutdown, but as these impacts of the big, brutal bill continue to unfurl their havoc, their terror on the American people, we want you to know that you matter. And what you're experiencing matters. It matters to me, it matters to this network, and it matters in our country's debate about how to move forward. And so we've created a special phone line that is dedicated to you, the listener, sharing your stories with us, specifically me, but more broadly, everybody here at Civic Media, and by extension, our audiences. We've got a special phone line and a special email that is dedicated specifically for you to share your stories. What is the impact of Donald Trump's tariff terror on your small business? What is the impact of the Republicans' insistence on stripping the subsidies away from the Affordable Care Act that make healthcare affordable for so many millions of Americans? What is it like to not be able to afford childcare? We want to hear from you. So I'm really proud and happy to announce that we're going to have this email and this phone number for you available anytime you want to share your stories. Here is the email, wematter@civicmedia.us. That email is wematter@civicmedia.us. And the dedicated phone line is 855-755-0771. Again, that's 855-755-0771. We want to hear from you. We will share your stories. And I especially want to thank a particular listener who inspired us to create these outlets for you to share your stories with us here at Civic Media and on the Maggie Dawn Show. That's Bud from Janesville. Bud wrote in to Jamie and I and Jacob, and here's what Bud shared. Hi, Maggie. I love to listen to the rebroadcast of your shows because I can't listen live. However, I have to shut you off now because I'm becoming too depressed. My wife and I are each 62 years old and have to access the ACA for healthcare for the first time in our lives this year. If Trump and the Republicans won't even discuss restoring the subsidies for healthcare through the ACA, what are we supposed to do? We cannot afford the non-subsidized premiums, and my wife has a chronic immune disease. We're losing hope. Love your show. Keep up the good work. Bud from Janesville, you are not alone. We're going to continue to share stories like Bud's on this program. And again, we invite you to share your stories with us at the email address wematter@civicmedia.us and the number 855-755-0771. Let's turn to the news of the day. Two incredibly important stories being reported across Wisconsin media this afternoon. The first comes from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We've been talking about how Donald Trump's tariff terror is hurting the agricultural industry nationwide, but especially here in Wisconsin. And here in Wisconsin, we have approximately $1.3 billion a year that we sell of soybeans. This is about 16,000 soybean farmers here in the state of Wisconsin. They are the second largest crop in Wisconsin. In 2024, farmers here harvested 102 million bushels of soybeans. So, as China and the United States remain locked in a tense standoff over tariffs, it is Wisconsin soybean farmers and our agricultural industry that is paying an incredible price. So again, thanks to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We'll put a link to that article in our show notes from today. Please check it out. We will continue to cover this as the tariffs continue to wreak havoc and terror on small business owners and farmers and families across the state of Wisconsin. In addition, here in Wisconsin, Marquette University Law School poll just dropped their newest poll. And it shows that approval for President Donald Trump here in the state of Wisconsin continues to decline. It stands at 43% in September, with his disapproval at 57%. Importantly, this last round of polling was done before the government shutdown, a government shutdown by Donald Trump and congressional Republicans because they refused to face the reality of the big, brutal bill's impact on Americans' health care. This is a small decline here in Wisconsin since Donald Trump took office in January. And while his approval remains strong with Republicans at 81%, that is 8 percentage points lower than it was in January. And it shows that almost 1 in 5 Republicans now affirmatively disapprove of Donald Trump's job performance. In addition, the Marquette Law School survey has also found that a large majority think political violence is a big problem. We're going to be joined by pollster Charles Franklin in the coming weeks, along with an expert on extremism, to work through this issue and to talk in more detail about this latest Marquette poll. So stay tuned for more coverage on that. In addition, close to home here, Tom Tiffany has announced his first big fundraiser, and it is, of course, loaded with GOP big money donors. It's going to be happening this Friday here in Milwaukee, and it's got names like, you know, the E-Lines and folks like that. Remember, the E-Lines are a couple that has been busted for using undocumented workers, and yet, of course, fully support Donald Trump. Tom Tiffany, and by big money donors, let me give you some details here. If you want to go to this event for Tom Tiffany, a single ticket, if you want to be a platinum sponsor, costs $20,000. Gold sponsor at 10 grand, silver, 5,000, bronze, a cool grand. If you just want to be a lowly attendee, that's going to run you $250. Yeah, Tom Tiffany, man of the people. In addition, big national news today, scientist Jane Goodall has died. The Jane Goodall Institute announcing on social media that it learned this morning, Wednesday, October 1st, that Dr. Jane Goodall, UN Messenger of Peace and founder of the Jane Goodall Institute, passed away of natural causes. She was in California as part of her speaking tour in the United States. The Institute says this: Dr. Goodall's discoveries as an ethologist revolutionized science, and she was a tireless advocate for the protection and restoration of our natural world. We are also, folks, one game into the wild card series, and boy, if you are a baseball fan, the Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees really had a special outing for you last night. Who likes to root for the Yankees anymore, anyways, with their huge dollars? It ended up being one of the most impressive pitching performances I have seen in my entire life. The Yankees went up very early in the game, 1-0. The Red Sox came back, took the lead in the seventh inning. And so going into the ninth inning, they came out with their closer, a guy named Aroldis Chapman. He's a big guy and throws absolute heat. Aroldis gave up 3 singles in a row to load the bases. And then with ice in his veins, boy, he struck out the next batter, had a fly out on the batter after that, and then struck out the final batter from the Yankees. That man was absolutely smoking, throwing over 100 miles an hour. He stands quite tall on the mound, big, burly guy, and he was absolutely perfection in mustering his control and his focus to help the Bo Sox take one from the Yankees at home at Yankee Stadium. I called my dad to talk about it. He reminded me that Mr. Chapman pitches a wee bit like an old pitcher from the 1960s, a guy by the name of Ryan Duren, who was known as the Wild Man. Big Coke bottle glasses, threw heavy heat back in the 60s, 100 miles per hour. And to bring it all home to Milwaukee, Mr. Dern was the inspiration for Charlie Sheen's character, the Wild Thing, Ricky Vaughn, in the film Major League. See, it all comes back around to Milwaukee, folks. Stay tuned. We've got more headlines coming up for you next. The lies the GOP is telling about the shutdown. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
A new choice. The Fox Valley's real news and great conversation. WISS.
Hey, Oshkosh, the Hope Fridge is returning. It's Amanda with another new Wisco 411 for you. And this is truly exciting for the area. In fact, there's going to be a grand opening on Thursday, October 2nd, beginning at 9 a.m. outside Trinity Episcopal Church at 203 Algoma Boulevard in Oshkosh. And they're inviting you to join them. You can learn how to get involved in supporting this community resource through donations, volunteering, or just by spreading the word. Check it out. Head to WISS.FM and click events.
Is violent crime in the U.S. higher than 25 years ago? No. Violent crime is lower nationally and in major cities than 25 years ago, according to FBI and Justice Department data. In 2023, cities with 250,000 or more people reported 771 violent crimes per 100,000 residents, down from 1,093 in 2000. Nationally, violent crime has stayed below 400 incidents per 100,000 residents for a decade, compared to about 500 in the late 1990s. Pew Research reported a 49% drop in violent crime, which includes murder, rape, robbery, and aggravated assault, since 1993. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
My name's John Driscoll, proud member of the Patriotic Millionaires. When I was CEO at CareCentrix, I doubled entry-level wages. The impact? Productivity went up, turnover went down, and the company was successful. When employees are off the clock, they're real consumers, the consumers that drive the economy with their spending. By paying employees a fair wage, we're actually helping out all of us in giving our economy the best chance to succeed. I'm John Driscoll. I'm a patriotic millionaire, and I approve this message.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses for free. Find a mentor today at score.org.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining me. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Republicans are lying every single day on national news networks about the government shutdown. A couple of things that they're lying about. The first is that they're going to have to lay off people in order to bring essential services to American citizens. That's a lie. You don't have to lay off anybody. Workers, once the government reopens, get back pay. Essential workers stay on the payroll and stay working. That's all bogus. By the way, the fiscal year for the federal government just ended. You know how DOGE was supposed to create like trillions in tax savings? No. The government spending is actually up a few hundred billion dollars over last fiscal year. Just pointing that out. So no savings from DOGE, and everything that they've claimed on that bogus DOGE website basically cannot be verified at all. So just to be clear about that. But the big fat fatty McFatterson lie that Republicans tell every single day on national news outlets without FCC Chairman Carr threatening to shut the network down is that Democrats want to give health care to illegal immigrants, the language of Republicans. Federal law prohibits that. Period. Full stop. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries has explained this time and time again. He said yesterday, quote, federal law prohibits the expenditure of taxpayer dollars on providing health care to undocumented immigrants. Nowhere have Democrats suggested that we want to change that federal law. Well, let's listen to Republicans lie about it over and over again. Here's a reporter yesterday in the White House asking Donald Trump this specific question.
Not eligible for the health care subsidies that Democrats are demanding. So can you clarify, what are you talking about when you say Democrats want to protect their health care?
So when an illegal person comes in, a person who came into our country illegally, therefore breaking the law, and look, we all have big hearts. I have a bigger heart than you do. They're all breaking the law, and they're coming into our country. And we just, as a country, cannot afford to take care of millions of people who have broken the law coming in. We want them to come into our country, but we want them to come in legally. Now we have a strong border, very strong border, thanks to Christie and Tom Homan and the whole group. They've done an amazing job at the border. I mean, we had a border that was reckless. We had a border that was a disaster. They were coming in by the millions. I say 25 million people. You're saying less, but I say 25 million people came in illegally. And no system can take care of the health care of all of those people that came in. Now,
okay, lies, just lies. And here's House Speaker Mike Johnson lying when reporter Caitlin Collins asked him the exact same question yesterday.
We're rolling the greatest hits on our social
media. Yeah, I'm just saying that the point about giving people who are here illegally health care is not exactly what is in their proposal.
No, it is 100% it's what their proposal.
Immigrants who have legal status,
no,
and you're just
Caitlin,
disagreeing
you're
on who's eligible.
No,
I looked at it, actually, because I was curious about your argument yesterday.
You should study the CBO's analysis that they just put out a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I saw that about the 1.2 million people. You're basically arguing about who has legal status, people who are seeking refuge here or seeking asylum.
No, I'm making sure that we are making sure in our provisions that we sign into law have ensured that health care benefits go only to eligible U.S. citizens.
But
Chuck Schumer's proposal.
Federal
law was not being enforced. That's the whole point. We had to fine-tune that so that we could strengthen the health care program. That's what we did.
Lies. These are lies. Lies, lies, lies. Let me be very clear about this. Immigrants who are not here legally and are not seeking asylum do not have access to Medicaid. They would not be eligible for the federal ACA subsidies. The only time an immigrant receives any sort of coverage is if they have a medical emergency and show up in an ER. I'm talking like a heart attack. The reason is because of our federal EMTALA laws. Anyone presenting to an emergency department with an actual emergency condition must be treated regardless of insurance coverage. And to be clear, when people go to a hospital without health insurance, the hospital social services will help them in applying for temporary Medicaid so the treatment will be covered. But this doesn't necessarily help the patient. It just helps the hospital get paid because the patient wasn't going to pay for it anyways. It benefits the hospital, not the patient. And if you take away federal Medicaid payments from hospitals who provide emergency care, which they're required to provide under EMTALA, who are providing that federally required emergency care to immigrants, you end up forcing those hospitals to provide the treatment for free. This, in turn, will cause hospitals across the country to close, especially in rural areas where they are already struggling. So if you want to see fewer rural hospitals, just keep voting for Republicans, folks. That is the key to an absolute healthcare disaster. This is an absolute falsehood from Republicans. It is a scare tactic. It is a lie. And it distracts folks that are good faith Republicans from the reality that because Republicans and Donald Trump wanted to give tax breaks to people who do not need them, who would consider those tax breaks a rounding error, fewer Americans will have the health care that they are entitled to, the health care that they deserve. More Americans will be sicker. More Americans will die. That is the reality of the big, brutal bill, and it is all coming to roost starting on November 1st. And the sad reality of Democrats saying to Republicans, we're not going to sign on to a continuing resolution unless you restore the ACA subsidies, is that just like Donald Trump this week has claimed credit for capping insulin under Medicaid at $35 a month, which was a Joe Biden accomplishment, not a Donald Trump accomplishment, if indeed the ACA subsidies are funded again because Democrats demanded it to reopen the government, I'm sure Donald Trump and Republicans will lie and take credit for that, too. When we come back, I'll be joined by Jessica Seawright. She's a candidate for Assembly District 51 for this day's edition of Broad Appeal. Don't go anywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
WISS, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
For 98.3 and 96.5 WISS News, I'm Lisa Hale. Two homes for veterans facing homelessness are now closed. Savannah Tomei Olson has the latest on a proposal to reopen them.
The Veterans Housing and Recovery Program gave vets a place to stay and access to services to help them get back on their feet. Earlier this year, Governor Tony Evers' budget proposal included $1.9 million to keep the program afloat, but Republicans removed it from the budget, and it was not in the eventual deal that GOP lawmakers struck with the governor. There are three homes in this program. Two of them have closed, the ones in Chippewa Falls and Green Bay. The only one left is in Union Grove. State Senator Jamie Wall from Green Bay.
Closure of these facilities means that there are going to be 41 fewer beds for homeless veterans in northern Wisconsin as we approach this winter. This didn't have to happen, and it's a shame that it did.
State Senator Republican Andre Jacques authored a bill that would bring back the funding. There was a public hearing on it a couple weeks ago. Rock Larson is a Wood County Veteran Service Officer.
In the recent past, I have veterans who could benefit from this program and homeless veterans from central Wisconsin state that they have no desire to relocate to southeastern Wisconsin. These program sites offer veterans residential programs to build the skills necessary for them to re-enter the local communities and be sustainable. Without the case management and roof over these heads that this program offers these veterans, they are doomed to poverty and chronic homelessness.
Journal Sentinel reports 10 veterans were moved to the last remaining site in Union Grove. 11 had to be moved to programs not specifically meant for veterans or even to Minnesota and Michigan. There are about 350 homeless veterans in Wisconsin. For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
I'm Lisa Hale for 98.3 and 96.5 WISS News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Peach Wabba. Have you heard of Tilly Norwood? If not, you probably will be hearing more about this AI actress in the near future. AI is becoming more of an issue in the entertainment business. It was a big point of contention during the recent Screen Actors Guild strike. Tilly is the creation of Aline Vandervelden, a Dutch actor, director, and physicist. That's a rare combo. She is the founder of Particle 6, a video production company that makes AI. Vandervelden says Tilly is even being looked at by acting agencies for representation and has her own Instagram account, the AI with the IA. As you can imagine, the Hollywood acting community is not happy about this creation. According to Yahoo News, the Screen Actors Guild says Tilly is not a real actor, as she has no real-life experiences to draw from, and that AI devalues human artistry. My question is Tilly really even a she? Not sure if she can be compared to a real actor or if she is more like animation. This will get more interesting and or contentious real soon, folks. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to WISS, the Fox Valley's home for the Midwest Farm Report, with me, Cam Yonke. I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid-50s. Mostly sunny and staying warm for tomorrow, a high pretty close to 80. And we stay warm with 80s right on through the weekend, some rain chances towards Sunday. Cooler next week. Right now it's 73.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we continue from on location in Shawnee, Wisconsin. We'll continue to follow the government shutdown. And when entertainment and politics cross over, who do you hold accountable? Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome back. If you're rejoining us, I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Just a reminder, at 5 o'clock, very special hour of the Maggie Dawn Show planned. We are going to be breaking down the rhetoric of the right. Specifically, I'm going to take on all of these claims from folks that I'm just taking Charlie Kirk out of context. He's not actually a racist. Yes, he is. And I'm going to prove it to you this afternoon. Piece by piece, we will break it down. A whole hour devoted to the rhetoric of the right and showing you why it is a bunch of fallacy, distraction, lies, misdirections, and frankly, bait and switch with emotional appeals that make people largely feel afraid and attempt to divide us all when we really have far more in common than what divides us. So do not go anywhere. Tell all of your friends and family, maybe that crazy uncle that you have to argue with at Thanksgiving, to tune in so that they can, you know, hopefully have their eyes opened and their hearts opened a wee bit as well. But it is 4:30. It is Wednesday, and that means it's time for Broad Appeal here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm super excited to be talking with the candidate for Wisconsin State Assembly seat in District 21. She is a social worker and a disability rights advocate. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Jessica Seawright. Congratulations on launching your campaign last week.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here and so excited to run for Assembly District 21. For those of you listening, that's Oak Creek, Milwaukee, and Greenfield in southeastern Wisconsin here.
It is, I think, one of those districts that will be a very, very close election in 2026. Very purple, folks of all different political persuasion from that district. Why, given the clear passion that you have as an advocate, as a social worker, helping people, why make this turn and decide to run for office, especially given the political environment that we're in right now, which is so nasty.
Indeed, right? Like a lot of folks have asked me that to help me prepare. And let me tell you, this in District 21, the last election, when the lines were redrawn, we came within 900 votes. So this is definitely a campaign to watch. Please keep in touch with me, jessicaseawright.com. Why did I turn my eyes toward running for office? It came through disability rights advocacy, working with Senator Chris Larson, Representative Christine Sinicki, Representative Gwen Moore, Tammy Baldwin, Chris Murphy, right? I have been in good company over the last 6 months, working with Protect Our Care and other organizations who are fighting on federal, state, and local levels to get the message across. And let me tell you, that's been a vulnerable space, because as a mother of a child with complex needs, you are telling your story over and over and over again in the hopes that someone will listen, that someone will change their mind and understand what your family's day-to-day looks like. And let me tell you, my family is purple, right? Yeah. At the dinner table, we don't agree on everything, but we love having dinner together. We're family. And I'd say the same thing about my neighborhood. You know, and one thing, the reason why I'm running for office is because I think there's this perception that there are givers and there are takers. And let me tell you, I've been doing therapy. I've been doing social work research. I work with a ton of providers, teachers, doctors, aides. And let me tell you what, there are not only givers and there are not only takers. We are all a little bit of both across our entire lifetimes. And it is time for our legislators to see that, to hear that, and to understand our complexity so that we can move forward together.
Folks, again, that is Jessica Seawright, candidate for Wisconsin Assembly District 21. I love how you frame that up. This is a debate that I find myself in with folks very frequently that divides the world in that false dichotomy of makers and takers, which works well for folks that are quite conservative to paint the world in such a way, but doesn't actually lead to the sorts of meaningful policy improvements and changes that we need to actually help all working families who, at different times in our life, I think if we're all being really honest about it, we've needed help. We've needed a lucky break. We've fallen on harder times. And those that live in the blissful world where that has never been their situation, yes, you are the rare exception. Talk to me a little bit, Jessica, about some of those policy changes that you think are essential to make sure that things are working better for working Wisconsinites.
Definitely. So if you jump on JessicaCWright.com, you can read more. I'd love if you got to know me. I'm looking to open doors and have conversations. That's why I jumped in here this month, more than a year out from the election, so that I have time to get to know the issues on a more specifically. So roughly where I'm coming from, what I've heard in sessions for years with clients, in community work, in the work that I've done as a family member, as an advocate at the state level with the long-term support waiver, what I'm looking at is safety.
Tell people what that is, Jessica, if they don't know what the long-term support waiver is.
Sure. So I am currently serving as a parent representative. There's a long-term support waiver in Wisconsin. And what that does is that operates in tandem often with Katie Beckett Medicaid waiver. It's funded through Medicaid, and it allows families to receive ancillary supports, so those secondary supports that really help us to make it, to help us to not go into bankruptcy. You see, when you have a kiddo who has extra needs, you might need support with widening your doorways. You might need assistance in modifying a vehicle in order to transport your child to their appointments. There are many needs that creep up, and that program steps in and makes it affordable for us. Let me tell you that there is a parental support payment that's calculated based on income. And that makes it possible for us to give back too. So there you go again. We give and we take. We give and we take. And it opens doorways for both my spouse and I to work, you know, through the pandemic. So that's what the long-term support waiver is. And, you know, on my website, you'll see that I talk about safety, being serious about safety. I talk about healthcare, keeping healthcare accessible for families like mine, for communities like ours, housing and education. And I would just say that these, you know, I think if I was in the same room with y'all, we would know that these are intersecting. Right. These are not separate issues, right? So Medicaid is putting some funding into schools in order for speech therapists to jump in the room and help kids be able to communicate more clearly. Why is that important? Because then kids feel less frustrated. And their behavior is maybe more in line with getting a cohort of 25, 35 students through curriculum each day. That's why that's important. There's healthcare, there's education talking. We're talking about housing, so social determinants of health. We know that when people have the things that it takes to live stably, our communities are more predictable, our communities are safer. We can go and have a meal with our family and feel a little bit more calm in life. So I just wanted to draw out that these are interconnected. But the reason I come to Serious on Safety is because I'm a social work researcher who has worked in criminal and juvenile justice for about 15 years since my master's in social work. And so I've sat in rooms with folks with young kids that are in secure care, with their families, doing interviews. I've presented to judges to talk about, hey, here's what the research says about this particular treatment. It's it is worth offering as a sentence or it is not worth offering as a sentence. So I think I can bring a level of complexity to really hold and understand folks' lives as they are, not as we are trying to create them, which often ends up being a binary.
Yeah, so much there, Jessica. And I want to just reflect where you ended, which is understanding where people are at, the actual contours of their lives, and the context and nuance and complexities that abound for people that have had significant challenges, whether that's intersections with our legal system, the need for specialized care if you've got kiddos that have those kinds of challenges. And it's striking to me, and I know you heard me talk about the fact that I'm going to be talking about Charlie Kirk starting at 5 o'clock. The screaming about context for understanding Mr. Kirk, who was a multimillionaire with a platform that reached tens of millions of people, and yet in that same breath, no extension of context or a willingness to see complexity for folks in our very own communities facing far greater challenges than Mr. Kirk ever faced. And then secondly, I just wanted to reflect back to you, the four things that your campaign is built around: safety, healthcare, housing, and education. These are completely nonpartisan things. They are what every single one of us needs to survive. And when we have them, when we have them in more stable environments, when we have them in greater abundance with easier access to them, that's when we can not just survive, but begin to thrive. These are the building blocks of making sure that we all can really succeed to our highest potential. They are things that all of us want and deserve, and that the richest country in the world should ensure that every resident and citizen has access to. Tell me a little bit about, again, not just your journey as a social work researcher, but some of the stories that you've experienced, Jessica, the personal stories, because I think sometimes folks that study this stuff, we end up in our academic lingo and we forget to tie it back down to these very real experiences of families and people in our communities.
I could go on for so long, but I'm just going to talk you through a day, just a single day that I've had in the past year. So I would be driving up to my son's public school. He goes to a public school, and look over at the bus stop, and there's a dad with three kiddos who jumps off of the bus, gets his kids out of the bus, the public, you know, the Milwaukee Transit bus, gives them a kiss, wishes them a good school day, and then goes back to the bus stop to wait so he can get back to go to work. I'm walking towards the school and I'm seeing the teacher shovel the walks because they're having a hard time getting that maintenance worker on staff. We have parents fighting for parking spots. They're stressed, going to work, trying to get their kids into school on time, trying to get to work on time, right? Not being able to say hello to each other because of the amount of pressure we're all under. I'm getting to work and I'm talking to a client who's really nervous about losing his Medicaid. He's left the justice system. He's doing really well. And he's telling me about using the last few bucks he has to buy a sandwich for someone that's sitting outside of the Pick and Save. I'm working with kids who are managing trauma that they have been through and working on getting back into school, building a love of school, building connection with their family. You know, there's just story after story. You know, my son works with caregivers with AIDS, and oftentimes their stories are quite complex as well in terms of they are doing the hard work and then they go home, they feed their children, and they're caring for them too. And then they start over and over. And these are the families that need us to understand that these policies should be clear and straightforward for them.
Yeah, folks, so much to discuss here. Debunking the mythology about makers and takers. I am with candidate for Assembly District 21, Jessica Seawright, social worker, parent, problem solver. We'll be right back with today's edition of Broad Appeal right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked, everybody.
We'll be right back.
as Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Focus on Freedom provides support and guidance for children and adults with disabilities. Here's founder Marla Kopecky-Penny talking about foundations in caregiving. How does a parent or other caregiver manage their own emotions when their child is dysregulated?
Caregiving for someone with diverse abilities comes with real emotional weight. Our course, Foundations in Caregiving, helps you understand what's happening for them and for you. This class gives you tools to help you stay regulated in the moment, build structure at home, and reconnect with your role, not as a caregiver, but as a parent. It's self-paced, on-demand, practical, and built for real life.
If you or someone you know has disabilities and are challenged finding appropriate resources and guidance, Focus on Freedom provides a wide variety of support services, such as foundations and caregiving, personalized family support planning, demystifying schools and services, one-to-one training for individuals with diverse abilities, and more. Visit FocusOnFreedom.org, empowering independence and transforming lives.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns. It's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at HazeldenBettyFord.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
Step right up. Circus history is alive in Wisconsin.
The circus would come to town and whole cities would shut down. There wouldn't be school, the stores would be closed because everybody would go to the circus.
A big part of the circus, the wagons, and now what's believed to be the last bell wagon anywhere is at Circus World in Baraboo. Commissioned by the Ringlings in 1892, this 10,000-pound rolling musical instrument was the crown jewel of the circus parades.
There's parade wagons. The circus parades would happen to get people excited to come see the circus. And so those are the very ornamented ones, lots of carving.
That's Jennifer Kronk. She's the curator of history at Circus World. Three other unique wagons owned by Felt Entertainment in Florida are also on loan for the next couple of years. It's a slice of Wisconsin and circus history right here, where you can relive the glory of the parade and echo of the bells calling you to the big top. I'm Terry Barr.
Get ready to go for the green and gold on this local Civic Media radio station. Listen each weekday for the keywords to text for your chance to win our daily prize, $200 cash and gold jewelry. And be entered to win our grand prize, two indoor club level seats to see the green and gold take on Minnesota in Green Bay. Just download our free Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 9, 11, 1, 3, 5, and 7 for your chance to win in our multi-state contest. For complete rules, go to civicmedia.us.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. We are in this week's installment of Broad Appeal, where I talk to amazing women candidates, elected officials, organizers, and activists from across the state and beyond, because women often have broad appeal. They see the needs of their community. We've got one such candidate with us right now. Jessica Seawright is running for the 21st Assembly District in 2020. You can find out more about her and her campaign at jessicawright.com. That's Jessica Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T.com. Jessica, before the break, we were talking about your background as a social work researcher, as a disability advocate, and specifically about the fact that every single person in every single community in Wisconsin needs to know that they are in a safe place, that they've got access to health care, that they've got stable housing, and that they can get, or their children can get, an education so that they can succeed and fulfill their highest aspirations. We were talking a little bit about access specifically to health care. We know in the big, brutal bill, effectively Republicans have put in what I'm going to call onerous, really dumb, stupid, completely ineffectual paperwork requirements that will simply end up pushing people who are completely validly qualified and deserving of Medicaid or Medicare off of Medicaid and Medicare. Tell us what your perspective is, literally from the trenches doing this work every day.
Yeah. So, you know, of course, I want to come out talking about the clients that are served, the patients that are served. You know, the feeling of increased reporting requirements every 6 months, say, that is going to create huge barriers to access for many families. And often what I've found is that we're a little bit backwards because the paperwork requirements get more and more complex. The lower socioeconomic status, the less money you have. It gets more and more complicated. And what I hear from bills coming out of the state assembly are complicating that. So let's take healthcare and then let's break it into all of these pieces so that you don't have a streamlined way to access your care. What I feel as a provider, what I hear from my mom, who's a nurse, is that on the backside, we have multiple systems that we are required to document in. So for clients who are receiving, so if you have commercial insurance, it is more straightforward. As folks have need, it gets more and more complicated. You're logging on and noting in multiple different systems in order to give care. I don't think that needs to be the case. I don't think we need to punish people for needing care because it brings us all up. And so I think that we can expect more. That is why I'm running for Assembly District 21, is we can expect more from our legislators to plan and bring these programs together to be more cohesive, because that's going to make a difference in patients' lives, in their family and their caregivers' lives, and in those employees that are doing that direct care.
Yeah, it's the more you need, the more complex, and the more the increase in volume of documentation and multiple systems there are to navigate. Anyone who has had anyone in their life that they have tried to assist in getting through those systems knows that it's nearly a full-time stinking job to do that. It is literally why social workers exist, to help people navigate. Republicans are just making the system more complicated. They've created a straw man, a complete fallacy of argument that there are somehow millions of people just sitting around collecting benefits, twiddling thumbs. That is a lie. It's a damn lie, and it's one that's been around for far, far too long. Jessica, in the break, you were talking to me a little bit about your experience as a candidate and some of the feedback that you've been getting online. Please share with our listeners.
Yeah, so I just announced last week. I've been in this at about a week. A parade that I visited over the summer, I was handing candy out. You know, you're getting to know folks, handing candy out. And a young gentleman who was with his friends said, "Hey, you know, I don't want that. You're disgusting." Right? And then recently on a Facebook post, there was someone who said, "Hey, you know, she's probably useless." Right? And I can take that. I'm a therapist. I promise you, having worked through the pandemic, having worked through the past 2 years of what we've been going through, I can take it. I don't bring it up for that. What I bring it up for is that he was at a parade. How cool is that? That guy was at a parade. There is a connection point there. He still wants to be out and be a part of our community. There's another connection point with Facebook because, listen, I logged onto that guy's profile and he's a veteran, a Marine veteran. Guess who else is a Marine veteran? My dad. I'm the daughter of a Marine veteran, and our family is four generations of veterans. So we have something in common. And that is what I'm going to be seeking to do over the next year, is let folks know we have more in common than you think.
Such an important message in these times when it seems to be the language of division, especially coming from the right, the vast majority of time, language of oppression and difference and who deserves and who doesn't deserve. We all deserve safety, healthcare, stable housing, and great education to help our kids and ourselves succeed. Jessica, we've got just about a minute left. One of the things that I like to do with candidates and folks that join me for this segment is ask people, what is something about you that might be surprising to our listeners, a little bit of levity in sometimes these so very trying times?
Well, I'm just going to get right to it because I needed levity in during the coming out of the pandemic, you know, and so I signed up for improv classes, and the Midwest should be surely be proud of our improv scene because it is on point. And so I went to improv classes and learned how to pivot and enjoy company and be around people who were different than me. And I loved it.
That's amazing. Our very own Greg Bach, a bit of a stand-up comic on Matt and Air on Air every morning from 9 to 11. Don't miss out on Greg and Jane Matt and Air. And don't miss out learning more about Jessica C. Wright. Find out more at JessicaWright, WRIGHT.com. That's going to do it for this edition of Broad Appeal. When we come back at the top of the hour, I take apart Charlie Kirk's rhetoric bit by painful bit. It ain't about context, folks. Keep it locked. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio.
This is WISS Berlin-Oshkosh and WZBU New Holstein-Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The federal government at a standstill for at least two more days as the stalemate in Congress continues. Republicans need as many as 8 Democrats to help pass a stopgap measure. Only 3 Democrats have joined so far. ABC's Jay O'Brien says 750,000 federal workers are furloughed, essential workers on the job without pay.
The first round of October federal paychecks already went out this week, so luckily that's done. If the shutdown continues into mid-October, when the next round of federal paychecks set for this month are set to go out, it would delay those paychecks. You're talking about the 14th, 15th, and 16th of this month.
Lawmakers expected to vote again Friday on a funding measure. Morocco, the latest country to see a rise in anti-government protests involving Generation Z demonstrators. Young protesters clashing with police today, denouncing budget spending for the World Cup. And acclaimed primatologist Jane Goodall has died. Her institute announced the 91-year-old died of natural causes. This is ABC News.